When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's a bit trippy of me, isn't it? Welcome to the gang, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, the show dedicated to breaking down the topic of grief, one conversation at a time, with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. That's a bit fast-paced there, my apologies. A bit out of breath doing this introduction. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Like I said at the end of last week's episode, this has been a very requested topic to have on the show, and one that I have been wanting to talk about for a while, but almost had to ready myself to get into the headspace to want and be like equipped to talk about it, and really to educate myself about it too. And guys, that is prolonged grief disorder. Now, some of you might be gasping and being like, oh, God, here we go. Been waiting for this one and have done a little bit of reading about what that is already. And some of you might be like, what the hell is that? I didn't even know this was a thing. So for those who do know about what this is, gear up. And for those who don't, by definition, what prolonged grief disorder is, as per Wikipedia, prolonged grief disorder, also known as complicated grief, traumatic grief, and persistent complex bereavement disorder, in the DSM-5, which is basically, I'm going to do so many things in justice here, of like the logbook of like all disorders and things in like psychotherapist world and all that malarkey, is a mental disorder disorder consisting of a distinct set of symptoms following the death of a family member or close friend. That's a very, you know, compact description of it. But basically, back in the summer, this was announced in the DSM-5 and announced that certain symptoms of grief may fall into a category called prolonged grief disorder. And it had the online and offline grief community quite up in arms with very different opinions and feelings towards it, some in total rage and upset, like really upset by it, and have many question marks over it. And some were quite comforted and quite curious as to maybe potentially, do they see themselves in kind of the things that the DSM were acknowledging may be part of this new diagnosis? And when I first saw the outrage, I kind of retreated and I was just like, what the hell is this? I don't think I was in the right mind frame really to be deep diving into something that was quite loaded, let's say, loaded. And I sat on it for a while and I was then began to pick up some interest on it. And I thought, no, I need to talk about this and I want to talk about it. And more so not leave my own biases at the door or actually unpack my biases towards it, potentially, because I was very much on one side of fuck this is a crock of shit, and then actually to take a step back and look outside and go, well, why has this been, you know, I say created or acknowledged and put into such a serious DSM-5, you know, look at me trying to be like professional in some sort of, you know, I just wanted to unpack it. I wanted to see both sides of the coin of just like, how did we get here and why are we here now? And so I knew that I wanted to speak to somebody about it. I wanted to speak to somebody who either works professionally or will be working professionally with people who will have this diagnosis or be on the journey to get this diagnosis. And then I also wanted to speak to somebody also who is bereaved as well. And I was having a conversation with one of my like newfound friends via Grief Gang, as I do. So many friends now, I love it. And I am speaking with, to you, it's an alias name, my friend Laura. And my friend Laura, she is a training psychologist. And so, and she is also bereaved too. Do you know how much I'm trying not to say her real name here? And Laura is the name that we have gone with. I'm really, really trying not to say it. And yeah, so during this episode, both Laura and I are both going to be unpacking what is prolonged grief disorder and what does it mean? And also hearing from the experience of Laura of both being a bereaved person who sees and feels one way towards this and then with a professional hat on too feels one way towards it. Where do you meet in the middle and like how conflicting that can be? We also discuss, you know, what are the actual benefits to having a diagnosis like this? What actually having a diagnosis such as prolonged grief disorder can do for you in terms of professional and exterior support? How did it came to be? What was kind of the research that went into the back of this? It's a really, really interesting episode. And I mean, me and Laura speak off phone about it quite a bit and did before, and there's a lot to it and there's still quite a lot unclear about it as well. You know, we're very much in the infancy of this new diagnosis. So maybe in a year's time, as we do say in the episode, we'll come back to it and see maybe what has and hasn't changed. But yeah, buckle up. Just buckle up. Yeah, buckle up for this episode. It's a real thinker. And if you're coming to it with maybe your own thoughts and feelings to it, I'd be really interested to see and hear from you at the end of it if anything's changed or made you think about it. So I'm going to shut up now. This is a really long introduction. Prolonged grief disorder. Let's get into it. Laura, Laura, Laura. Prolonged grief disorder. We have been, well, me and you have been talking about this in the DMs and on text for so long and been like divulging so much. And this has been a topic that has been long awaited for on Grief Gang. And one that I think I've been hesitant to do, which I think we'll later on discover by some of the responses and kind of like feedback and general feelings toward this topic. But nevertheless, it is a topic that is like desperately and importantly needed to address. What is prolonged grief disorder? And since when did it kind of come about and been on the radar type thing?
Yeah, so as psychologists, we would never diagnose someone. So that's kind of psychiatry's role. But in an essence, the prolonged grief disorder diagnosis has got sort of tick box things that you sort of have to get the diagnosis. The same as any mental health diagnosis. So the kind of specific requirements in terms of length of time, number of symptoms, that sort of thing is normal across ways of diagnosing. It's not a perfect science. So I think the prolonged grief disorder is, I can't remember whether it's 6 months or a year in terms of the time that's elapsed since your person has died. But it's still having a significant impact on your day-to-day life and functioning day-to-day.
Yeah, I first started seeing articles and like comments and responses to PGD from my American friends. I think I woke up one morning and looked at my Instagram. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, what is this? And then I remember just seeing it everywhere. And I was like, I think I was on like my little break from Grief Gang in the summer. And I was like, oh, I'm not like digesting too much right now. Like, just leaving it. And then a couple of weeks went by and there was still uproar. And I was like, what is this? And then as I started digging deep, and then I had a few people send me in my DMs, like articles, like, have you seen this? Have you read about this? And I was like, shit in hell, like, this is really, really upsetting a few people and really ruffled some feathers. And I think the immediate thing that jumped out to me that I thought, oh, guys, come on, was the 6 month to a year mark. And I think when I looked, I think it said 6 months for children, which I found even more baffling, and then a year for adults. So it's basically if a child is still showing these for 6 months, I think that's right.
So that's a child losing someone else or an adult losing someone else. Okay.
And that's the immediate one where I thought, oh my God, I thought they've put a time frame on this. I went, oh, and it really got my back up, and I thought, and it made me think back to, I think for everybody, it made them think back into those 6 months to 1 year.
You're right. And I think those big articles framed it as that, in that sort of way, that you are expected at this point to have, and I was reading it as have forgotten. You're expected to have moved on and forgotten almost. Which is something that doesn't happen.
But I just wanted to ask you, we've gone right into it. People don't really even know, Laura, who you are and your profession and what is your personal connection to grief, and like where, I think you've given like a flavour of kind of like where you sit on it. But I was so intrigued to hear your perspective of both from a professional head and then also a personal head too. So yeah, give us a bit about you, Laura.
Yeah, happy to. So I'm a trainee clinical psychologist. So I'm doing a doctorate at the moment after undergrad and working for a bit. And at the end of it, we'll be a qualified clinical psychologist. So potentially we'll be working with people who are struggling with grief amongst a lot of other things. So my grief journey, I guess. Grief has been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. For as long as I know, really. So my baby brothers were born when I was three, twin brothers, and we lost one of them when he was 5 months old. So I was four at the time. So trying to get your head around that as a four-year-old, I don't remember much of it. Obviously, we've spoken about it since, and we talk about him, and as a family, we have spoken about it since, but it just was a kind of, from as long as you can remember, that's really when you first form your memories, three or four. So that was always very much part of who I was. So I feel like that's a lot for any child to go through. And then when I was 11 or 12, my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. And 5 years of remission and coming back, we lost her when I was 17. So kind of double whammy of grief in our family, really. Both of which happened around Christmas. So Christmas is a really difficult time.
To go back before you went, when you went to uni and you decided what you wanted to, when you wanted to study and to become, was it, obviously, throughout your life and your experiences of what you went through, did you always kind of feel like, I know I want to do something that will eventually lead me to working with other bereaved people?
It's a great question. So I initially thought I wanted to be a medic. Kind of in the early days, maybe 14 or so, thought, actually, no, I want to be a doctor. That sounds really cool. but the more I thought about it, the more it was, I'm not interested by the sort of the biology, the chemistry behind it. Mm. It was much more, how on earth are people dealing with this? And how can I help in that? Physical health has always been a massive interest of mine in terms of the mental health and physical health.
Yeah.
So I thought, actually, no, I don't want to be a doctor. I think being a psychologist would be quite cool. And mum was a speech and language therapist with children, which is what I think, you know, I think I want to work with children long term. So it was always this, I want to do something similar to mum, but I want to do my own thing as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of similar, but also I've got my own identity within it as who I am as a psychologist. But that in itself comes with such massive hurdles of working with speech and language therapists who do what mum did day in, day out.
And then so going to university, and what was it like? I always find it so I was 19, so yeah, we were both teenagers when we lost parents, and I never went down the university route. And then I meet friends who I cannot fathom, like, having, I couldn't pull myself out of bed just to even go to my 9 to 5, let alone one start studying and really, really have to use your brain for a really, really intense course and education. What was it like in uni for you?
It wasn't easy. I didn't get into my first choice uni, so I went through clearing, which was another huge blow, in that I was phoning up unis on results day saying, this year I've lost my mum. What do you expect me to do? Like, yes, I've dropped a grade. Brings up such anger still, because they were kind of like, well, sorry, it's the rules, it's the way things are. So I was already, you know, going through clearing, and that was a huge knock to my confidence. And first year was really difficult, kind of being away from home and everything that I'd built as a support system in terms of friends, family, local places that I felt comfort, local, you know, I could nip and be like, oh, me and mum came here, okay, I'll go there. And all of that was, I mean, I wasn't a million miles away, I was probably about 2 hours away. But that's far enough to not be able to nip. Yeah.
Going through all that you've been through, both with the loss of your brother and your mum, when this came out, or before you even knew, you probably knew like it was coming and research that was, did you know?
No. Maybe I should, I don't know.
You tell me you don't do your readings after work, Laura. You're not, no. It was probably as big of a shock or an announcement to you as it was to, like, everybody in the community and just general public. So what was, can you remember kind of what was your first kind of reaction when you were, what mind was speaking first, your professional head or your personal head? That's what I'm really interested in.
It's such a good question, because I feel, I think, opposite in terms of personal head and professional head. I think so. I think my personal head was the one that spoke first, and it was a very similar, what? Kind of disbelief, confusion, anger. So I feel very different and coped very differently losing Fraser than I did losing mum, than losing, I think you mentioned the other day, pet loss. That's huge. All of these different losses, because I'm the same person, I haven't reacted in the same way. And I think, it, just this idea of there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And I was thinking, you know, is that a disorder that, is it a label that I'd want? And I was thinking, on the one hand, you know, if I don't get diagnosed with this, if I don't have this label, then I don't miss mum enough. I didn't love her enough that I've recovered. Okay, I can get on with my life. What's wrong with me that, or if you do get diagnosed with it, it's, oh, I'm doing this wrong.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, yes, Laura, we have got many a question. So, yeah, before, I think, yeah, in the summer, I put some cues out on Instagram and just said, guys, tell me what the hell do you think about this? Like, don't hold back. I'm going to be interviewing with somebody. I was like, no idea yet who. And then me and you were talking, and I was like, Laura, do you want to do it? And you signed yourself up. You might regret it afterwards. No. No, what's good to know is that these are not aimed at you. They have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think anyone listening, like, who may be thinking, why are people so enraged like this? Like, this is maybe potentially surely a good thing or not. Like, in these cues and kind of reactions, you may feel like the rage and why, and we'll kind of dissect into that as best as we can. To delve in, because we've got a few. First question is, why is it quotations prolonged and not just grief? How long is quotations healthy grief? What about the shock? Grief didn't kick in for months. Is that not healthy either?
And I feel like that just perfectly sums up the huge difference that everyone feels with grief, and that it's healthy to feel different, and there's not a normal or, you know, you could say the way that I dealt with it was incredibly unhealthy in terms of throwing myself back into it, but I needed to do it to get my, like, it's just how I coped at the time. And you know, that's others might have seen it as unhealthy, but it's what my brain needed to do to keep going and get out of bed every morning.
It's kind of, and again, it goes on to whose definition of healthy. What is the definition of healthy? If somebody is, you know, going through the photo albums every day or somewhat, but are able to kind of go on with their day, but if in, you know, the disorder, it's saying, you know, kind of holding on to memories and going back and for, like, staying in that kind of time in your life is unhealthy, but it's very contradicting. And so, yeah, who gets to deem what healthy grief is, and where do we draw the line of when we say you're doing it wrong?
That's one of the things about this. It makes it sound like it's a very linear, you know, the five stages of grief. You move through this, you move through that, you get to that, and you reach the end.
And then the best thing to discover is that the five stages of grief actually isn't even for grief,
isn't it?
Did you not know that? Oh my God, Nora, the five stages of grief. Oh, actually, for those who are dying.
Okay,
for the dying.
So, oh my goodness.
I know. And then just along the way, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she just got, like, somehow, of course, there are very similarities, but it was, she originally created it, for those who were dying. And then when you look at that perspective, you go, yes.
But I think I was so nervous in terms of our teaching, because we've had teaching on grief, and I was like, how on earth am I going to sat there and be told what it's like to grieve? And I was really worried that it would be, here's the five stages that you move through, but it was incredibly eye-opening and enlightening to know that kind of the psychologists of today are being told it's messy, it's all over the place, it's healthy to jump about, and we're not doing stages, we're just doing raw feelings.
But then with this, though, then does that not take it back like 10 steps?
It does feel like it. And I mean, it goes back to a very common discussion between psychiatry and psychology, and we have very different training methods, very different approaches to so for anyone listening that doesn't know, psychiatrists, you're medically trained first, you're a doctor, kind of a medical doctor, whereas psychologists, clinical psychologists, we deal much more with talking therapies, and I think we're much more in the camp of, this is messy and healthy, and let's feel those feelings, and it's going to really hurt.
And the next cue or remark is, to me, it doesn't exist. What's your thoughts? Straight to the point. If you asked me when I first saw it, I probably, maybe disrespectfully, would have said, I don't think it does exist. But then actually, upon from talking with my community, it's not even to be the same here, being like influenced, but actually with anything, isn't it? Your immediate reaction is, and your bodily reaction is to something. And then actually taking the time to research and sit with your own feelings about it. No, I absolutely do think it exists. But as me and you, I think, discussed, and although I'm not a professional, kind of, I think it comes a bit grey of, is it a disorder? Is this maybe potentially something like depression?
Mm-hmm. And I think you've picked up something where they've put it within the DSMs, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, where it's been added into. Yeah. It's down as a trauma response and kind of in that category, whereas there's a lot of pushing for it to be moved to an adjustment disorder. Again, we're using difficult word, like a disorder.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
But kind of moving it to, you're right, it's adjusting to a new way of living.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, this is what I was saying earlier. Do we know if the term was developed with any with any bereaved people and what their thoughts were on it? It really doesn't seem like it. And as we were saying earlier, like can't imagine that a bereaved person would maybe agree to these time frames or these symptoms of what it is, but
it's a good question. So I did a bit of looking because I really wanted to know the answer to this as well. And there is mention of asking people who would be classified as having that. And apparently 90% agreed that they would have felt better, their family would appreciate their struggle. But I really couldn't find any more information on who was asked, what country they were, what country the study was done in, all questions that would have been really helpful to know the answers to.
Yeah, and where they are in their loss. Like, are they talking to people who are within that first year time frame that they're talking about? Mm. Are they asking people who are further down the line? Like, I don't know. Like, I think if I was to be part of like a research study for this, it's all relative of like, if somebody was to approach, we're doing a study on this and, you know, we want you to think back to that first 6 months to a year of your life. It's very grey. It's very grey.
I was about to say the same thing.
It's very grey. So they might have said, like, did you feel like, you know, you couldn't get up out of bed and move forward or do daily tasks? I would have been like, it was a shit show. But I know that I did.
I did find a couple of research articles that asked professionals what they thought of it, which I thought was interesting that they were asked first. Rather than me being able to find anything about people who've actually been through this, I would really hope something like that is on the way, kind of being done somewhere. Maybe I don't know, I couldn't find anything, but a lot of research is kind of done in the background and then presented, so it's
things
are going on.
I remember thinking, where the bloody hell has this come from? Like, it just popped out of nowhere, and I was like, there's been no inkling to it. Whereas, like, I would like to have thought if there was kind of like a study, like someone in the grief community would have got a whiff of it, like a little whiff of like, this is going on type thing. How long is too long? Do you think bereaved people will be stigmatized by diagnosis?
For me, like with my personal sort of hat on, at the moment I feel in a, I don't want to say healthy or in a healthy place in my grief, but I feel in an okay patch is how I'm going to put it.
Yeah, I'm with you,
And I fully expect myself to go back into the not okay patch. When things like weddings, when things like having a family, when things that I want in my future I have to go through without mum there, I fully expect to feel like I did on day one.
Isn't it interesting how we can acknowledge that? Like, I'm so with you there, Laura, at the moment of like, I feel really good. And I think maybe word for us maybe like, I guess, stable, but is that maybe a bit of a loaded word? But just like, everything's kind of on an even keel right now. It's on an even keel. And but then knowing, and it's not living in like, not for too long though, kind of knowing that big grief monster will loom its head again and say hello. But knowing, as you said, looking to the future and even knowing and acknowledging that, okay, even if today has been a great day, a great week, a great month, knowing that around the corner, there can just be something that will just throw us off.
It's almost overnight, the rest of your life changes. And it's like, coming back to the question, how long am I allowed to get over that? Like, everything about your life changes overnight. And we, you know, there's very different circumstances leading up to losing. I had 5 years to get my head around the fact that it might happen. And I don't know if there's a better or a nicer way of doing it. But I still had that long to get my head around it. And it was still horrific.
And then, Yeah, the second part of the question, yeah, do you think bereaved people will be stigmatized by this?
I think so. And again, it comes back to, you know, if you have this diagnosis, do you come out the other side of it? It's stuff that I'm still trying to get my head around in terms of, okay, do you get treated for it? Do you come out the other side of it? Am I then, again, woohoo, I've done it. I've successfully adapted.
Yeah.
Or if I've got that label, would I be looked at differently, that I'm doing it wrong? That I...
And
I think maybe to touch on some of the pros of it, I think it will help people to recognise. Sorry, are we getting there?
No, So the next one is, I think I might have it. Yeah, I think I might have it. How does someone get diagnosed with this? What's the pathway?
And I really wish, more than anything, I could give a really clear, nice answer to this. Again, my professional hat on now really angers me that I can't. But I think because it's such a new diagnosis, there's nothing really in place. And that's one of the things that really worries me about how sort of out of nowhere it seemed to come, is that, okay, we've got this label now. And
what do we do with it?
We're going to tell people they're doing it wrong and leave them to it.
It's so true. Yeah, as me and you spoke before on the phone of like, and I said, so like, what is the pathway? And you're like, well, actually right now, there's not really a lot. And kind of it is, what is the objective of being given this disorder?
I think there's still options. So I think your GP is always your first port of call in terms of mental health struggles. Mm. And maybe even naming, look, I think I've got this. And to be really honest, I reached out to a few medic friends before doing this, and it wasn't a diagnosis they were aware of.
Yeah, and like if you're kind of going to your GP in kind of despair and kind of, as you said, your GP is normally always your first point of call, and you're kind of going in, having done a little bit of research, listening to stuff and thinking, yeah, I really resonate with that and I see myself in those symptoms and this research, pardon me, and then going to your GP and then going, I ain't got a clue what you're talking about. And then it kind of goes back to when we were talking about, is this some sort of, presenting of depression? So kind of what's the, like, it's really confusing for people to go and say, like, do I go to my GP and say, like, oh, I think I might have depression or I am depressed, and then kind of hope they kind of lead down the pathway to help with potentially prolonged grief disorder? Or are they just going to be, and this is, potentially, brazenly saying, like, misdiagnosis. Is this person just going to be treated for depression when actually they need grief support? But this next one is, do you think this is just a Western way to pathologize something that is a normal human reaction?
I think that's where the anger comes from, is that what I'm feeling is normal. And when I read this question as well, the Queen, what she said about... grief is the price we pay for love.
Yeah.
And that is what came to mind for me reading this question. I just thought, that's so, she got it spot on, that actually it's a really normal thing to feel. That doesn't make it any less painful. I've done sort of placements in different areas around where I live, around the university, and a lot of those areas have been very diverse in terms of race, culture, ethnicity, and being part of conversations about what grief is like in different cultures is mind-blowing. It's fascinating. It's incredible. And I wish we did things, I now will steal ideas and
learn and to understand.
Absolutely.
Second to last cue, I don't agree with it, but I'm interested to find out what the actual pros are of having a diagnosis and how it can benefit someone and their grief. I really like this because this felt like it was like me. So I was like, I don't agree with it, but what's the actual pros? Like, what if somebody in my life who I'm supporting or who I love going through it, what are the actual benefits that they, access to stuff? What are the pros of it?
It can be divided into two. So I think there is huge pros in terms of the wider community, in terms of the world. It's not changing the world, but I think it really, whenever I've mentioned this as a concept to friends, family, we've seen it on your Instagram page, people are coming up and saying, well, no, my grief was different, my grief was like this, I felt like this, and talking about it in a way that it's really, really stimulating conversation, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think the impact
it's
of
like bad press is still good press, isn't it? All bad press is good
still
press.
Talking. Yeah. Yeah. And I've had conversations with friends and family, and it's open sort of, what do you think about this? And where do you sit on this? And how was that for you? And
yeah.
So I think that definitely can't be overlooked. Now that it is an official diagnosis, I think, well, I know funding is being pumped into understanding it as a concept,
yeah,
kind of refining that diagnosis, funding into, okay, what does treatment look like? Yes, it's not ready yet, but there's huge randomized controlled trials going on at the moment of, okay, how do we treat this?
Yeah, so yeah, funding, it, these things are always does go back down to money. And this is, yeah, the interesting part to kind of talk, I guess, about the difference between the US and the UK and kind of, I think, why in the US, it's although there is still outrage at it, it has been more widely accepted a little bit. Yeah. And there's maybe more pros to it. And people can accept those because of things like insurance. And like, yeah, people not being able to have the time off work because they are grieving, but a workplace doesn't accept grieving as a illness. Mm. So for somebody to go to their GP, their doctor out there and present the symptoms and be diagnosed with it, they're then signed off of work and they can have that full paid leave. So when you see that, you are like, ah, I don't disagree.
Except. Well, funny, so there's a very big discussion, debate in psychology about the use of diagnoses at all. Okay. And whether actually we should be looking at what is this person struggling with in terms of symptoms, and how can we treat those symptoms, forget about a label and trying to put everyone into perfect categories.
Yeah.
And it's something I think there's quite a lot of merit behind in terms of let's stop all our time and money and everything into trying to perfectly categorize things, and let's think about what we can do to help a specific, you know, the person struggling with symptom X, how do we treat that? Okay, there we go.
And the last one, I hate the idea of being medicalized for simply grieving for my mum. I don't have anything against medication or people who take it, but I think it's a total cop-out instead of providing actual and helpful bereavement support.
Yeah, to an extent that support isn't there yet. And I've not worked in a service where I would be able to help someone who has that as a diagnosis or is really struggling. I've worked differently with grief, but not as a sort of single presentation. And it's just, and I don't want to leave people feeling sort of despair and, you know, there's nothing out there. It can't be helped. But the more that we can push for better funding of services, and I think that's only going to be a positive, because it's a huge gap.
The first kind of offering for somebody who would be presenting would potentially be medication until they've kind of figured out what that kind of support from a professional looks like.
So I think it's just, I think, well, I'm a psychologist, I'm always going to say therapy is the answer, talking therapy is the answer. And I think from, I'd say that with a personal and a professional hat on, it's what really helped me. But I was in a very fortunate position to be able to fund that therapy, which I know, especially at the moment, isn't an option for so many.
Yeah.
But I think if it is, absolutely do it. And if not, whether it is going to charities, whether it is your GP, whether it is platforms like this, you know, the spaces that you create will have to deal with other ways until, fingers crossed, touch wood, there is a perfect pathway and treatment for everyone immediately.
Well, there are professionals, one who have been through very similar things like you and do actually feel like in some respects the same way as you, as well as giving why this thing has come to light and what the benefits are and why, some bits are a bit grey and some are clearer. So thank you.
No, it's been a pleasure. You know what a big fan I am of the Instagram page, the podcast, of everything you do. So it's been, an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, well, wee wow. I know. I mean, I say I know. I mean, I hope that episode was a bit of a thinker for you and was quite knowledgeable and insightful. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed kind of the like duality of having a guest who is both, you know, bereaved and is part of the gang, and also can bring a professional perspective to it as well. I really, really enjoyed my conversation with Laura. It's quite fun having an alias person on. You'll never know. Yeah, I really hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's got you thinking. I hope that if you have listened and you can recognize or resonate with some of the, you know, symptoms and kind of things that Laura and I were speaking about, and you think, I think this might be me. I think I may be potentially living with this or suffering with this, that it has hopefully given you a bit of power and knowledge to go and to, as I know we did speak about, there wasn't really like a clear pathway, but to at least start that conversation with the professionals or the people in your life. So yeah, thanks again for joining me this week. It's been great. And I will see you next week for another wonderful Grief Gang episode. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.